Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Here's something you might not know about wireless. Sometimes what you see isn't what you get. But with Visible, what you see is what you get. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Just $25 per month, taxes and fees included. Switch now at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. Hello, the internet, and welcome to season 237, episode 3 of Der Daily Zeitgeist, a production of iHeartRadio. This is a podcast where we take a deep dive into America's shared consciousness, and it is Wednesday, May 18th, 2022, which of course means
National Miles, No Dirty Dishes Day.
None.
Exactly.
Just throw your dishes out.
It's also National HIV Vaccine Awareness Day, and it's also National Visit Your Relatives Day.
Sponsored by
check in
moms everywhere. Right. go visit your relatives.
Yeah.
HIV vaccination day is, so are we close on that? The HIV vaccine? Do we, just to throw a conversation that required loads of research that we didn't discuss before?
I mean, I know that obviously the treatments have improved vastly since the 80s. But yes, this is meant to bring awareness around, you know, looking for a safe and accessible vaccine.
Yeah, we need it.
Yeah.
All right. Well, my name is Jack O'Brien, aka This Country Makes Me Lose My Mind. And now my baby is hungry and only cries. Well, there's something you can do. You just give your baby Mountain Dew. That is courtesy of Christy Yamaguchi, man. Hit it with the, one of the many memes that suggests Baja Blast flavored or just Baja Blast as an alternative. There was the Baja Blast baby food.
Right.
I don't get it. I don't get what people think is funny about this. The kids love Baja Blast. It's one of our national treasures. Gives them an extra little pep in their step.
Mm-hmm.
And then just a horrifying crash afterwards. But
what's the secret to all those gold medal counts at the Olympics? The kids exactly. Are hitting that dew early.
Well, I'm thrilled to be joined, as always, by my co-host, Mr. Miles Gray!
Okay. Okay, hold on. Susan Collins, I'm headed to your sidewalk, and I hope you're ready. Yeah, I'm going down to Susan's with some chalk, son. This senator ain't seen a brown-skinned man since her grandparents bought one. Okay. Woo! Look, that came to me in the shower. I was like, shotgun, chalk, son. Yeah, okay, I'm headed down to Susan's with some chalk, son. and saying, hey, Susie, please, you know, maybe vote to codify Roe. But hey, you know, it's on
terror.
It's on your
That's
terms,
terrorism. You know
what I mean? Yeah, exactly.
Writing that shit with chalk.
Luckily, the police said did not seem like an overt threat.
Please.
So all
and thank you. It's not enough to just say please. If you don't say please and thank you,
then it's a threat.
The police will be called.
Absolutely.
Well, Miles, that was wonderful.
Thank you.
Anytime there's a backing track, it feels like a wrestling entrance song. Like,
oh, sure, sure.
Like oh, I'm my in the God. Ring and I'm like, oh, what's happening? What's happening here?
He's coming down from the rafters.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, we're thrilled to be joined in our third seat by a very talented writer, comedian, and film producer, co-founder of the inclusion-focused film and media incubator, Big Vision, Empty Wallet. It's Danny Faith Leonard!
Danny!
Hello.
Welcome.
I wish I had a really cool prepared intro.
Okay. I mean, look, I would say...
Next time.
Know, what's your favorite karaoke song? And then try and find a spin on those lyrics that make it about you. I feel like that's always the easiest way for somebody to improv a song.
But no pressure. You don't have to do it right now.
Yeah.
All right.
No,
but for next time. Just
one, two,
I'll
three.
Spare you. I need a new karaoke song.
Uh-oh.
But my former business partner walked down the aisle at her wedding to Careless Whisper, and I just thought that was brilliant.
Wow. That's a meme right there. Wait, but what do you have a favorite karaoke song? I'm not going to make you sing, but just in general, it's always nice to know where people are at with their karaoke picks.
I tend to go 90s songs that a crowd would like to sing really well. It's like not that they're necessarily my favorite songs. And then when I get really drunk, I always seem to request the theme from Full House.
Yeah,
people love it.
I mean, that's another 90s banger that the crowd
Holy
is going to appreciate.
Shit.
I love
that.
But it has this verse. It has this verse in the middle that we don't know.
Right.
Kind of like the theme from Fresh Prince has the same thing. It has a verse that wasn't
in the.
Oh, right. Really?
That wasn't in the TV version of it.
Is it about the cab ride that's stinky? What happens in the middle verse of the Fresh Prince one?
Oh, I don't remember.
Mm.
But yeah, it definitely prolongs his trip.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a transphobic verse in Cheers, I think, in the Cheers theme song.
Absolutely.
Yeah, those hidden verses where they're like, maybe, maybe not.
Maybe here. And yeah, and they're like, let's just focus on the fact that he came to Bel Air. And then the other stuff in between seemed a little problematic. I don't know why that's necessary. Just say that the cab smelled weird.
Yeah.
We're gonna do a whole verse.
Is it go home, smell you later, or yo homes, smell you later?
Yo home. I think it's yo home, smell you later.
All right.
Yeah.
That's what it, I think my friend's dad thought it was go home, smell you later. And he like loved to make fun of him for that. And I was like, I mean, it kind of works. It's not that bad. He is saying bye.
I mean, whatever happened to predictability?
Thank you.
The milkman, the paperboard, even that. That
sounds
lyric
a little conservative and regressive.
Right?
Whatever happened to the ability?
The weak man, the paperboy, no contraception. You're like, wait, what the fuck?
Wait,
are these lyrics? How did I get delivered here? Yeah. Wow. What a song. What a song.
What a song.
I like your altruism, though, as a karaoke like selector, where you're like, let me get a torch song going to turn up the crowd. And then if there's a little treat for me, is going to be what's the full name? Everywhere You Look, the Full House song.
Ba-da-da-ba-da-ba-da. I think that's how that ends. Anyways, Danny, we're going to get to know you a little bit better in a moment. First, we're going to tell our listeners a couple of the things we're talking about. There's a big water disaster looming over California. And yeah, I don't know. I was reading about it and I was like, oh, you need like hundreds of different politicians to agree on this. I don't know. It was just one of those stories that felt like it hit a little different now than it would have even a few years ago. It feels like with a lot of politicians being fully unmoored from reality. So we'll talk about that. We'll talk about the mom who went on the Jesse Waters show. Is that his name? Jesse Waters. Yeah, on Fox, and talked about the evils of critical race theory when it comes to her biracial 14-year-old son. We're going to talk about Meghan McCain, my favorite author, all of that, plenty more. But first, Danny, we do like to ask our guests, what is something from your search history?
Well, you are in luck because I was doing a lot of research for different projects this week. I feel like going into any writer or creator or comedian search history is just dangerous. Mm-hmm. And I've been doing research for a project that I don't want to say that much about because it's in the very beginning stages and it's something I'm writing with two other people. But I was looking up Nazis on Long Island. Mm. I grew up on Long Island. There's a town that I've been obsessed with for a while, or obsessed with learning more about. I'm not actually obsessed with this place, but it's called Yaphank. And until 2017, the town was basically run by Nazis. And in
2017,
Yeah, 5 years ago. And in 2017, there was a federal lawsuit where they finally weren't allowed to only sell homes to German Americans anymore. But there, you know, in the 1930s, there was a summer camp there where they had a special train that ran straight from Penn Station to the summer camp every weekend. And it was a training ground for Hitler Youth. And it was called Camp Siegfried. And it's this crazy place that no one seems to know exists, except for the people who were there, who definitely know it exists. And, you know, I was reading all of these articles. And of course, when they interviewed people in the town, they were like, well, there's nothing to see here. But it's super fascinating. You
know, that's just Adolf Hitler Street.
It was Adolf Hitler Street.
I just saw an article with that. I'm like, what?
Wait, yeah. For real?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. The main street was called Adolf Hitler Street. There was Goebbels Street. There was Goering Street. Not until 2017. I think they changed that earlier.
Yeah, right. They're like,
Holy shit.
And the script is so like aggressively Third Reich on these street signs. You're like, wow. And like, it's like a log cabin behind it on Adolf Hitler Street.
I actually don't know. I can't visually place just based on you saying that the Third Reich font. What? Let me look it up now.
Like, Here, let me just put the link into the chat.
Helvetica? Is it Helvetica?
Helvetica. It's just that very like stylized, like scripted handwriting, like highly serifed.
Oh, writing. Yeah. There it is.
You know, like when you see stuff written in that, like for me as a person of color, I'm like, maybe not this place.
They're like, not just Germany, old Germany. Like,
yeah.
Motherland Germany.
So how did you?
It's also you will find that script at like Epcot, Germany, right?
Right.
Okay.
It's Bavarian script probably is what it's called, like in Microsoft Word or whatever. How did you first hear about Yaphank, like growing up in Long Island?
I definitely didn't hear about it growing up.
Oh, wow. Oh, so it's like, but it's that much of a thing where it's like you only heard tell maybe later in life. Like it was very.
Yeah, a few years ago when I was doing research for something else, I found it. But I'm surprised I didn't find out about it growing up because we used to find out about all of these weird places and go to drive to them and look around because there's like, what else is there to do?
Yeah.
And
when I lived in Kentucky, there was a place called Hell House and it was just a house that was supposedly like people had been possessed by the devil there. And we would like go drive by it and I would get scared and I was driving. I was of driving age and I was like, ooh, I would drive a little faster by it.
Oh, shit. Do you ever go to Gravity Hill?
I don't know what that is.
Oh, man. You don't know about Gravity Hill? The magnetic hill?
Oh, like I mean, that sounds like some shit I would still go to. Like, I would
Yeah.
Like, oh, man, the vortex here is crazy, man.
It makes it sort of like this, like it's an optical illusion where it looks like this downhill slope is actually slightly uphill. So when you put it in neutral, you're like, whoa, we're going up. And you're like, it's an optical illusion, asshole. But
I'm putting this on my list of things to do in LA.
Oh, yeah. Gravity Hill. You know,
Gravity Hill. Baby.
Shout out to Somar. Shout out to the deeper parts of the valley.
So how, like, this is one of those things that, I don't know. I assumed, like, coming out of school that I knew most of the cool stuff. Like, not that this is cool, but it definitely makes the world like, oh, damn, there are, like, still Nazis out there. Like, how is this not a movie? How is this not, like, a cover story of every, like, do you have any sense of, like, why this wasn't covered more?
I think there, I know that in New York anyway, I think people kind of like to pretend that New York's always been really liberal and all of this stuff was never there. So I have a feeling that that's it. Mm-hmm. But I didn't grow up near this town. This town was in Suffolk County, so further out on Long Island. I grew up really close to Queens in Nassau County. And even in Nassau County, there was this place. It's like, it's a wedding venue now called the New Hyde Park Inn. And I went to Sweet 16s there. And I think, no, my prom wasn't there. It was at a different place. But I went to Sweet 16s there and other like school events. And that was the Nazi headquarters of Nassau County. And so that's so insane to me.
Right.
And but you know, this stuff has always been there. There was a big Nazi rally in Madison Square Garden in the 30s. And like, it was always a part of the history of New York. It's just, you know, like the things that you'd never learn about.
Yeah. I've been thinking a little bit more about fascism in America for no particular reason having to do with the news or anything. But yeah, people forget that like it could have gone either way there for a while in the 30s. The business plot was dicey times. And now we've belatedly decided, what if we did decide to join up with the Nazis?
Yeah.
So what is something you think is overrated?
So this is a little bit of a complicated answer. I love our culture's recent fascination with cults and cons and all of the documentaries and documentary series on Netflix and the other platforms that are focused on these criminals. But I think the documentary series are overrated and way too long. And I wish that they would all just be movies.
Yeah.
Oh, like dramatic feature films, you mean? Or
no, even if it's a like documentary, condense it into 90 minutes and tell us the story. I feel like it doesn't need to be a series, and they've gotten too long. And I watched a really good one that's, you know, probably 90 minutes, and it like really helped me realize how long the other ones are. I watched Our Father, which is about this fertility doctor who swapped out his sperm and fathered, I won't say the number because then it's kind of a spoiler, but he fathered all of these children, and he even swapped out the sperm of like his best friend and used his instead. And it's like, it's insane. In the beginning, I was watching it and I was like, is this so bad? Like, how is this going to get interesting? And then it like got totally crazy. And the craziest part about it is that this all took place in Indiana. And in the end, he wasn't really convicted of a crime.
Wow. And wow. Him and his best friend are still tight to this day. They're
water under the bridge.
Yeah. You know?
Wow.
I was watching that other documentary about that guy in the UK who was like convincing all those people that they were like on the run from like MI5 because they were caught up in shit. Do you know that documentary? I forget what it's called. It's another one where like the premise is really interesting, but it's like, yo, it's like fucking four episodes. I feel like you could have told me the whole thing in like 2 hours probably. But yeah, I do find myself being like, okay, you found that this is a way to stretch people's viewing time a lot, because I think they realize, oh, like we've got like a, you know, Lost type cliffhanger ending sort of pattern we can get people into where it's like, oh, and you got to watch the next one now to learn who the detective is that's going to look into it, because that's a whole episode. And it gets a little tiring for sure.
Yeah. I love this overrated. I think that's right. I think that the default should be docuseries, and then like if necessary, like The Staircase probably I think earned its a long running time, even though I only watched like three of them and then got bored. But it does seem like it's very twisty turny, and they were learning things as it went. But for the most part, yeah, don't stretch it. And albums too, like albums don't need to be as long as they are. And, right. And movies. Make movies 45 minutes tops.
Come on.
All right.
Oh, wow, 45.
People got naps to take, you know?
Right.
Just we went from a 2 hour old guy take
to now 45 minutes for sure.
What's something you think is underrated?
I think this is like, this is going to make me sound kind of old fashioned, because this is something that this advice that my mom would have given to me. I feel like it's going someplace by yourself is underrated. Mm. I think people should get more comfortable going to things like comedy shows by themselves and just going to the things that you want to go to and not waiting for your friends to want to go with you.
Oh, okay. Got you.
I think like, we should get more comfortable doing that. Just
right.
And you know, so that people feel like that's something that they can do. I did a show in LA a couple of weeks ago and I met someone after the show who came by herself. And even in my head, I was like, oh, you came by yourself? And then right. I caught myself doing it. And I'm like,
everything good?
No, that's totally normal. Right. You should right. be able to go to something by yourself because you wanted to go to it. Even if no one else wanted to go, you should take yourself on a date. And this is also advice that my therapist gave me last week. So
perfect.
Figured I would impart it on other people.
Yeah. Oh, no, yeah, that's my favorite thing to do on the show. Is like, let me tell you what my therapist said last week, and I'm going to give you for y'all for free, okay? But yeah, that is like, I definitely find myself in a place where I'm like, okay, I want to go to this thing. Who's going to go with me? And people are like, I can't make it or whatever. I'm not interested. And then I'm like, well, I guess I'm not going.
Right.
Versus just being like, well, then I guess I'm going at it alone. And I do that from time to time, but I typically like ask first to see if there's a coalition of people willing to go first.
I'm going to a movie by myself is one of my favorite things to do in the world, to the point that I don't really ask people anymore. I just go by myself.
and then I stay in the theater for the next one.
It used to really depress me to see people eating by themselves at a restaurant for some reason.
Till I did it.
Yeah, but then like I love doing that shit. So I don't know.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, I really like this underrated because I've definitely enjoy like if I'm in a new city, being by myself, walking by myself in a new place. Like it's always fun to share that experience with somebody, but there's also something that feels really like an adventure when you're like, okay, new city, I'm going out with my backpack on. I got my AirPods in. I'm listening to some music, cruise around and like, show me what you got. Like, that's one of my favorite activities. I walked across the Brooklyn Bridge like 3 times when I was in New York, just on foot. Cause like, whatever, I got time. I'll do this. Like, let's just have a good time. And I really, really enjoyed myself and even had a meal by myself where the host was like, their maitre d' was like, we don't have any openings for like a table of two. I was like, it's just me.
And they're like, I could eat right here with you.
Yes. Yeah, so they're like, oh, you could, there's that bar seat open. I'm like, yeah, no, that's fine. That's fine. I'll
right.
Just look
right.
at my phone and read a little bit. You're good.
Yeah. And like with the judgments of, and I'm talking to you, Danny, like with the judgments being like, oh, you came by yourself. Oh, no. But like, I do that shit. But then that's my favorite thing in the world to do. So I think let's just let people do it and not be sad for them unless they tell you to be sad for them.
What do you, if you eat alone, what do you do? What do you sit in silence? Do you read your phone? Do you watch something? Or do you just try and be like, I'm going to fucking act like I'm just going to be so present with this meal right now?
I try to be present as long as I can and then look at my phone.
right.
Like a normal person.
Right. Because in my mind, I'm like, people are going to think I'm weird if I'm just eating here with no phone out by myself. Like, they think I'm preparing for something weird or something like that. No.
I pretend I'm on a very loud, very funny phone call with a celebrity. And I just keep name dropping the celebrity that I'm talking to. And usually that impresses people.
Oh, my God. Colin Farrell, you are so funny.
You are too much, Colin Farrell.
Anyway. What?
All right. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back and talk about some news.
Do you want to hear about the $100 wedding dress that just saved Abercrombie?
Or the tech acquisition that was just like Game of Thrones?
Or the one financial equation that can solve climate change?
Then check out our daily podcast, The Best One Yet, or as we call it, T-Boy.
This is Nick.
This is Jack.
And we pick the 3 most interesting business news stories every day for the perfect mix.
20 minutes each morning, you're going to feel brighter.
We call it Pop Biz, don't we, Jack?
Where pop culture meets business news. So whether you want to kick off a conversation with your buddies,
or you're going for that promotion at work,
or you just want to know the trends before your friends,
feel brighter by starting your morning with us every weekday.
Listen to The Best One Yet on the Wondery app or wherever you get your pods.
You can listen to The Best One Yet ad-free right now on Wondery Plus. For more deep dive and daily business content, listen on Wondery, the destination for business podcasts.
with shows like The Best One Yet, How I Built This, and many more, Wondery means business.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
There's a lot of pros to drinking Health Aid kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro, amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Pro, probiotic. That's a literal pro. And it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal or great on its own, whether you're having Pink Lady Apple, Berry Lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feeling Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
And we're back. And yeah, there's a story in the New Yorker a couple weeks back about like California's looming water disaster.
Basically, is it drought based?
It is drought based, Miles.
Oh, you read it for another water disaster that maybe wasn't drought based.
It's drought based. It's also so as the drought happens, you know, some of the land, the delta, the freshwater riverbanks and, you know, land that is like wetland is now sinking. And so that puts it below sea level. And there are Eugene levees in place to separate the seawater out. But the people who are like experts on this have been saying for about a decade now that like it's going to take one earthquake to, you know, for those to fail, and then all of our freshwater supply is inundated with salt water, you can't drink it, you have a major disaster. I feel like the reason I wanted to talk about this mostly is because it's just a different experience to read a story like this where the solution is some form of like there was a similar story. I think it was like 10 years ago called The Really Big One that I made everybody read. That was all about like, you know, everybody talks about San Andreas being the fault that where the big one's going to come from. But there's this Cascadia subduction zone up along like Northern California, Oregon, Washington State that is going to like goes off every 100 years and has, you know, unleashed some of the biggest earthquakes that like the world has ever seen. It like sent a tsunami across the Pacific and it reached Japan, and it was called the ghost tsunami for a long time. And because they didn't know where it came from, but turns out it came from this earthquake all the way in Northern California. So the article is all about people have been aware of this for about 10 years. Nobody's really doing anything. And that was frustrating to read then, but like reading about this looming disaster, and I still don't think anybody's like done what they need to do to prepare for that, the really big one. But reading about this one is like an extra layer of urgent and scary because there's so many people now that don't seem to exist in reality. Like they're just, you know, like you can't talk right, to, yeah.
You mean like in terms of the political
the
people
political,
we have in place who need to come to some consensus to figure out a problem that will affect every single person in the state, not just on a partisan level.
Yeah. They're focused on like stopping Disney from grooming children and like overturning the 2020 election, and like they sure as shit aren't going to compromise with like the people who they think stole the election. It's a fucking mess. But like the article keeps being like each problem makes the other problem worse, and they're talking specifically about how like the land being drier makes the land sink, which leads to it being below sea level, like just these like kind of cascading things, problems that like build into other problems. But like they don't really mention the politics of it all, but that's another thing. Like Robert Evans and the Cool Zone Media folks talk about this a lot on their It Could Happen Here. They call it the crumbles, where it's like, you know, small major like horrifying disasters happen and they like build on each other because of climate change. But you know, climate change is also tied into, you know, the rise of fascism and extremism, and I don't know, I just feel like we need to be acknowledging like all the interconnected ways we're in danger, you know.
Right. And there's so many. And I mean, like, this is something I remember hearing from like a friend's like spooky conspiracy theorist dad, like when I was in high school. And it's like, you know, the Delta only needs like a real specific earthquake and it's going to mess up the whole state. And I was like, okay, sure. And then as I like read more about it, and then like when I got into like more interested in like state politics and I was like asking around, I was like, oh, right. This is very possible. I mean, I guess on one hand, it's a, you know, significantly blue state, so they're probably on a state level probably easy to find some consensus. But when you get down to like the individual water districts that are involved in California, those, everyone's got a different agenda there. And I think kind of makes it a little bit alarming too, when we're also talking about how much that agriculture in the state is using the water as well. But meanwhile, we're like, hey man, don't fuck me, maybe wash your clothes like every other week or something. Like, what?
Right.
You fucking tell the almond people to cut the fuck back on using water. Like, you know, and I think we have, like you're saying, there's all these sort of skewed priorities when it comes to the water management and what we think is the way out, that, yeah, we have a very simple thing that we need to tackle first.
It's so hard to get people to care about climate change when it feels like it's something that's so intangible, but drinking water is something that's so tangible that you would think that it would, it would be an easier thing to bring people together on. But I feel like there were people who had that theory a few years ago when it looked like specific wines were in danger. Like, it was like, oh, like Republican ladies care about white wine too. And, you know, all of these grapes aren't growing in France anymore because of climate change. So clearly this is going to be the thing that that people are going to come together around, and then they're going to see that this is a thing. But there never really seems to be that moment where people care about climate change for more than 5 minutes. And like, I hope that maybe this could be a thing that could at least bring some people together, you know. And I read the article and I like that it's not like any of us are questioning climate change at this point. And these articles aren't being written to prove that climate change exists. It's like, that's the given. And, you know, this is the impact and we have to fix this right now.
Right.
But it's all very scary because I feel like people are on such a different wavelength with it. And even for those of us who understand that it exists and what the impacts could be, I feel like there are so many other things to focus on that. Right. It's like, I think about climate change real hard for like a week, and then suddenly I'm off to thinking about abortion.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
It's hard to keep my attention too. Yeah.
The model in my mind, like you were referencing, like maybe this will wake us up. And like that had been sort of my hope, like for the past, you know, 20 years was like, well, you know, it's a problem, but as it gets worse, like humanity has a history of like coming together to solve big existential threats like this. Not this big and existential, but like close enough. And now I'm like, that's why I wanted to bring in the politics, because I don't feel like if this crisis happens and if like suddenly all California is out of fresh water and like, you know, the many hundreds of thousands or millions of people, you know, suffer or die from that. Like, I don't foresee that being a thing where everyone who doesn't believe in climate change suddenly believes in climate change. I feel like that becomes just a like fertile ground for more conspiracy theories. Like that feels like where we are right now. I don't think we're doomed to that. It just feels like that is the place that we are right now, with social media being as prevalent and unregulated and just companies and capitalism being as unregulated as it is. So that's it's a scary situation.
Yeah, that, and I think, you know, the history of our country is we don't solve problems until like it's absolutely destroyed a ton of people first. We'll never get out ahead of anything. It's like, well, wait till millions of people die, and then it's proven that we have to do something about it. And I mean, the one benefit is like you do see, like in states that have been hit, like that are dealing with climate change, like Republicans are slowly being like, fuck, yeah, it's I'm old enough to remember this wasn't normal, you know, right. Like in like, for example, like North Carolina, like last year, they found like some bipartisan consensus on more renewables and things like that, because even Republicans came to the table to talk about climate change, maybe not in the most authentic way, but clearly it was enough that their constituents are like, no, you know, because there was a clip last week from the Outer Banks where a house just fucking washed into the sea, you know, that was like almost a $400,000 home. Just fucking the sea just ate that shit and just said, this is mine now. Mm. And I think for people who see that, they're like, man, I remember when the sea level wasn't that high up when I was a kid. And I think a lot of those things work on people, but it's only happening like very specific places where people are having to confront that shit head on. And I think because of the fact that all of those things aren't necessarily equally distributed experientially, it's easy for many people to stay like, so many Republicans, I think like less than 20% are like, climate change isn't a big deal.
It ends with an interview or like sort of mentions this guy, Michael George, whose title is Delta Water Master. Okay. So first of all, people need to just be given cool titles like that and maybe motivate them to solve this shit. But his background is like as a water lawyer, water company CEO, public utility executive, investment banker, college guest lecturer. Like that was weirdly and depressingly the moment of the article. There's also like this beautiful long description of how San Francisco Bay, when white settlers first got there, the water was so clear you could see like shoals of fish swimming at the bottom of the bay, and so many salmon migrated through its waterways that the sound kept people awake at night. And then they found gold and invented a water cannon for hydraulic mining that could kill a person from 200 feet away. So, but like there's all this beautiful description, but the thing that made me most hopeful is that they somehow got a water company CEO to like pitch in, and like granted, like he might still have connections to that and it might be fucked, but he is like working on help like that. I feel like that is what we need, is to attract the sort of people who go into investment banking and fucking being water company CEOs into like finding smart ways to actually like regulate and control capitalism and like bring, you know, like steer it in a direction that isn't going to fucking end our entire civilization.
Hey, use that hedge fund brain to find an efficient way to solve our water crisis.
Yeah.
And like, you know, figure out how you're going to balance the relationship between like big agriculture and the other, you know, stakeholders that are the biggest users of water. And maybe there'll be enough for people to wash their bodies.
Yeah, maybe. As long as my golf course looks good, though,
that's the thing. Like,
yeah,
when are we just gonna start just cutting off the water lines over there? We're like, you don't even let us use these fucking green spaces,
and they get that shit like at a bargain. They get the water.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
That's how we'll take down golf courses, is by cutting off their water supply. Right. And like we need to do that shit soon and then turn them into public parks. Thank
you. Yeah, 100%. Like if we had if every golf course in the city was a public park, oh my God.
Los Angeles would be like one of the great cities in the world. And instead, it's fine.
Instead, it's a brittle fucking pumice stone with nice buildings on it.
All right, let's talk about Jesse Waters, the Jesse Waters Show. Yeah. Must watch TV if you just want to feel your life just bled out of you, your will to live. Just a true piece of shit. I remember like the first time I saw this motherfucker on TV, he was like Bill O'Reilly's like intern, and I was just like, oh, this motherfucker is going to be a problem. Like right away, he just so confident and so dumb and so
racist.
Sure of his racist, horrifying worldview. But he weighed in on critical race theory as he is wont to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. First off, everyone knows this, but the disclaimer that critical race theory is not being taught anywhere outside of a college lecture hall. Mm-hmm. So let's put that on the side. Now, if you're just mad that teachers are talking about just general inequality and you just want to call that this other thing, man, fine, then, you know, do your thing. But in this Jesse Waters clip that was just going around on Twitter, it's one of the more like pathetic appearances I've seen from like a concerned parent, quote unquote, who's like, I'm here to help, you know, further this narrative that you want to keep broadcasting on your television, which is critical race theory is ruining my child. And in this clip, there's a concerned mother from Virginia of a biracial child who the mother is white, the father is black, and she is in a state of utter shock because her 14-year-old son is starting to form an identity at 14. I don't know what's going on here, Jesse. Is it this critical race theory stuff or is it puberty? I don't know, but I'm going to say critical race theory. And let's just listen in because it's, just hold on to your butts.
Your son is, the father's black, you're white, and he'd never mentioned issues with race before, you're saying? What exactly changed?
Right. We didn't have issues before. He's in eighth grade. They introduced this critical, program now he's having racial issues that was not there before.
What kind of racial issues is he having?
Well, he's seen himself just as a black man. He's seen things that don't go his way as racism, and he's finding safety in numbers now.
So when you're saying he gets a bad grade at school, he blames racism, or a girl rejects him on a date, racism, are those the kind of things you're seeing?
She's smiling.
Yes, I ask him to clean the house, racism, yes.
You're kidding, right? Are you serious?
No, I'm serious. They have totally changed his perspective. They have put him in a box.
So your 14-year-old son is talking back.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And weird. Again,
That's never happened before. That's weird that a teenage son would talk back to their parent.
To your mom who told you to clean your room. I've never done. I remember when my mother said that as a half black biracial child. I didn't say that. I didn't say it was racism. Right. I just said, I don't want to do it, mom. And I'd run out the house. But we didn't have the same vocabulary to use, I guess, as these kids do. But the
also,
program.
Ma'am, you are racist. So he's right when he says that it's racism. But not when other parents ask their kids, but you are a racist piece of shit. And
you have some issues. Yeah. So the program that he was participating in was one that was around encouraging students to have open discussions around race. Now, this was in the aftermath of the George Floyd murder. So they're like, we want to have, you know, brave conversations about race. So it wasn't some like kill your masters type shit. They were just saying, hey, we want these young people. We want to facilitate, you know, healthy conversations so these young people can begin to have a reckoning with our country's culture of discrimination. Pretty easy stuff. Like it's not, again, not on the extreme that this woman is sort of making out to be. And naturally, like everything, we see the backlash of it and time and again. And so a couple of things you know, this kid is 14. So the little baby that you were used to, like, you know, is absolutely in the period of their life where these questions are being asked, right? You begin to explore who you are, what that means to you, what your own identity is, what race means to you. I think she may consider her son, I think, half white, and she looks at it that way, but he is also half black. And I'd imagine he isn't completely white passing. So he, like, even though she may see her son as this, the rest of the world does not. That's just the facts. And there's no amount of proper speaking I could do or polo shirt wearing I could do to suddenly look different to somebody who has a bigoted perspective on race. That's just, unfortunately, the stakes of how, you know, it means to be not white in this country. So there's just kind of this whole thing where I'm like, I'm curious if this mom clearly is probably very disconnected from the idea that what it means to raise a black child in Virginia, even, and what all of that means.
Yeah.
Just in America in general. And that's when I'm like, Jesus, we just watched you come out here and use your son as like a fucking pawn in an optics win for bigots. Like, what the fuck was that? That's where I'm like, really, it's disheartening for me to see that about, like, wow, you really have no idea what your son is about to go through or is going through.
Right.
Because you're like, she referenced, like, he was never having racial issues.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, even if your classmates aren't bigoted, you know, outwardly, the fact of the matter is he's existing in a country that is sending a lot of signals to him. And he's probably beginning to see, when you say he's finding comfort in numbers or something like that, what the fuck does that mean? That he's hanging out with other black kids? Is that wrong?
Yeah, that was weird. And also, like, the insistence that, you know, a time where people are wrestling with just systemic and, like, murderous, like, violent racism in the country, that his response to that would be, first of all, like, incorrect for him to, like, have feelings about that, but also that it would be, like, the school's fault and not the fault of, like, what is actually happening, the reality. Like, it just assumes that there's no such thing as racism. So, like, they must be getting this idea from school because that's the only place they could have learned it, is a very blinded perspective.
Yeah. And he's 14. So it's not like he's first discovering his identity now.
Right.
This has been a process, and he probably just never felt comfortable speaking with her about it because of the environment that she created. Like, if you think that people start discovering who they are and forming an identity at 14, that's not the case either. I feel like whatever was going on at school maybe finally made him comfortable to say something to his mom about it. But I also, like, I don't understand how they always have these parents on roster to speak on these shows.
Right.
Where, I mean, well, I'm sure they find them on Facebook now, but they've always had disgruntled parents just ready to go on all of these shows about whatever the topic might be. But it's so crazy to me.
It's typically like these law firms will look for aggrieved parents so they can represent them in a lawsuit. And that's kind of how they end up to that next level where the Fox producers end up saying, oh, like, okay, like, you know, like, hey, man, we got this mom. She's suing the state of Virginia for critical race theory because, like, her son, who is black, is now realizing he's black. So that's all kinds of fucked up. Right. I'm pretty sure that was sort of like the segue or the introduction to this piece, is that she's suing, you know, on behalf of her son or her own rights as a parent. But yeah, it's really disheartening to see a parent like that who, she even said, she's like, he sees himself as a black man.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry. What can we unpack that a little bit? Like, from your perspective, miss, what does that mean?
Yeah.
And what is wrong with it? Is he not? And in your mind, are you telling him he is not? Is that why you're upset? Because you've been conditioning him to deny that he's black and that he's living in some post-racial, like, utopia that actually doesn't exist? That's what I'm really curious about. Like, it really feels like my son was not black before this.
Right. And there's also, like, a patronage. Like, there are parts where she's, like, grinning and laughing. And like you said, it's a parent who is having a difficult time getting their mind around the fact that that's not your, like, 8-year-old child anymore. And
they are like growing up, but like the just that is so fucking toxic.
And yeah, or and I don't know if maybe she's completely scared of the idea that, oh my God, that's right, my son is black and he's living in America in 2022.
Yeah.
And subconsciously that's making her uncomfortable and it's coming out this way. I don't know. That might be an overly charitable, you know, analysis of where she's coming from. But, you know, it's clear that she was not thinking about this at all until her son was, you know, probably articulating things where he was like, I'm identifying, I see my blackness and I see how people like me are treated in this country. It hurts me because yeah. that is me. I am part of this group of people. And yeah, now I'm realizing how much things I maybe ignored up until 14 that now I'm realizing were actually pretty fucked up. But you always told me, don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. But it gets to a point where you can't ignore that anymore. And I think credit to him on his journey, figuring out who he is and, you know, the culture that he's part of. But wow, what a fucking shitty mom.
Yeah. Yeah. You already think your parents are the worst when you're 14, even when they're not. But when you do have the right. worst mom in America,
oh my God.
Like that's got to be tough.
Like this poor kid is probably getting flamed.
Right.
They're like, yo, was that your mom on Twitter? I saw on that Jesse Waters clip.
Wow.
And he's like, bro, I told you. That's why. Like, I'm just, it's hard growing up in that house with that mom or whatever. But that's, I can't imagine that her appearance there did any good for him either, you know, on TV. Like, the fact is already, you're already suing the state or the school district. So already, like, I remember being in school and you knew when somebody's parent was like doing some wild shit trying to like cause a problem at the school, or they're like, yo, so and so's mom is suing the school because the seesaw was like too wobbly and said that's why his little sister like hurt her wrist. And everyone's like, people just like that shit gets out in the ecosystem of a schoolyard. Yeah. So I can only imagine at this point you're on Fox News too, that's probably not creating more friends for him.
No. In my school, that was always about sex ed. Like, we always knew the students who weren't allowed to take sex ed. They had to go to, like, study hall or something
right.
during.
Right.
And I grew up with, like, basically abstinence-only sex ed anyway. But still, right. and that was because of parents complaining.
Jesus.
But even so, we always knew about the parents who were coming up to school and yelling about something. And it was almost always that.
Right.
And, yeah. It didn't make it easier for those students, which I haven't really thought that much about, but they were probably embarrassed that they weren't allowed to go to sex ed. I just didn't really think about it at the time.
I went to a Lutheran K-8 school, and I remember in sex ed, like, there were those kids who, like, absolutely couldn't be there for the outdated slideshow from the 60s where, like, the like female reproductive system was like triangles and circles and lines, like not even close to looking medically accurate. Like, we've had this like fucked up vague version of sex ed where like the parts were named, but I couldn't accurately tell you what anything looked like because it was like, and then there's a uterus. And also, guys, it doesn't matter because y'all shouldn't be having sex anyway.
Yeah, we watched Philadelphia.
Oh my
God.
To learn that if you have sex, you'll get AIDS.
Oh my God. What?
Yeah. And I ended up writing a show about this, and I host the show mostly in New York, but now I've done it in LA too, called Adult Sex Ed. And it's because I had this sex ed in school. And then my mom was the opposite. She was actually a sex ed teacher, not mine, but she was, and we had this really open home. And so I had this totally mixed experience. But I feel like the way that these parents are being interviewed on TV now about critical race theory, it reminds me a lot of in the 80s and 90s, they would have parents being interviewed about sex ed and how that's going to ruin children's minds.
Right.
Not doing that today, too. But
it's like the generational thing. It's like, well, back then they weren't taught about sex. So then when it comes up, they're like, oh, but then parents now are like, man, we're fine with sex. I'm like, we're so online porn brained, like that being chased idea isn't necessarily like as pervasive. But now it's a generation of people who have never had a reckoning with racial relations.
Right.
And so that's the thing. It's like, well, I've never talked about that. And that shit makes me so fucking scared. Much like how my parents, who never talked about sex or had satisfying sex, thought it was the end of the world if we learned about sex. Mm. That it's like now it's this is the next cycle, which is like, well, we didn't talk about race. I don't know if this is good because it makes me uncomfortable. But yeah, it's wild to hear because like we were constantly just told just don't have sex. I grew up with this idea that like, yeah, if you ever had unprotected sex, you're going to get sick and have a child immediately. Like yeah. there's no fucking middle ground. And I like through my life, that. I was like, yeah. I was like scared shitless.
The movie scene progression is unprotected sex, woman holds stomach, and then woman throws up. And those are the three steps to prove that, okay, there's a pregnancy happening here.
Right.
Yeah. I will say I grew up in the wild early 90s and sex ed really radicalized me. I'll say really turned me into a freak. Those medical diagrams.
I was on to fallopian tube pics.
Those medical diagrams are about as sexy as like the diarrhea diagram in Pepto commercials. Like they just, right. Yeah, they're just like the human body, like in.
Right. And outline. I feel like the parents should have been like for me, like at the time, a bunch of teenagers, like kids that they're like most sexually curious or just like, they're like, even looking at that, like, this is so confusing to me. And I don't think it's doing what you think. It's going to cause some perversion right. in us. We're like looking again at drawings from the fucking early 60s that you're putting up on a stupid slide projector. And like the colors are like not even human. It's like the uterus is blue. And like the ovaries are green, and you're like, man, this looks like a bunch of geometry. It looks like a Mondrian painting, let alone anything I can have some like functional knowledge of anything.
Yeah, Dare worked though. We can say Dare worked.
Oh, what was it? Because you know how they're out in the streets again, Dare.
Yeah, that's right.
I was out the other day, and they're like, hey, you want to hear about Dare? I was like, actually, I do. What's going on? Like, why are y'all out here? Because it's like, I thought the drug shit was a wrap. Like. Y'all lost the drug war and all that? And they're like, yeah, I mean, it's about that too, but it's also a lot about mental health now. And we're like, oh, interesting. Okay. Mm. Well, I don't know what other subversive messaging you might have, but that was sort of what they were pivoting to. Like, look, we get it. We completely lost on the drug front. But now at least maybe we can be a force for good for
still run by the police?
I have no idea. At that point, I was just like, what are y'all pivoting to? They said mental health. And I'm like, thank you. I have to.
Were they on my way. Were they like high school students who were
no? They look like they look like normal people who are like signature gathering, like you know, like mid-20s, early 20s type people.
Buzz haircut, chewing gum, backwards hat on,
flipped upside down visor,
riding a motorcycle. All right, let's take a quick break. We'll be right back.
Do you want to hear about the $100 wedding dress that just saved Abercrombie?
Or the tech acquisition that was just like Game of Thrones?
Or the one financial equation that can solve climate change?
Then check out our daily podcast, The Best One Yet, or as we call it, T-Boy.
This is Nick.
This is Jack.
And we pick the three most interesting business news stories every day for the perfect mix.
20 minutes each morning, you're going to feel brighter.
We call it Pop Biz, don't we, Jack?
Where pop culture meets business news. So whether you want to kick off a conversation with your buddies,
or you're going for that promotion at work,
or you just want to know the trends before your friends,
feel brighter by starting your morning with us every weekday.
Listen to The Best One Yet on the Wondery app or wherever you get your pods.
You can listen to The Best One Yet ad-free right now on Wondery Plus. For more deep dive and daily business content, listen on Wondery, the destination for business podcasts.
With shows like The Best One Yet, How I Built This, and many more, Wondery means business.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
There's two kinds of people in the world, people who love Health Aid kombucha and people who have never tried it. The bubbly mix of probiotic tea and refreshing juice is delicious and good for your gut health, with great flavors to choose from that you can't help but love. If you've never tried it before, maybe try a bottle or can of passion fruit tangerine or ginger lemon. Your taste buds and your gut will thank you. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid kombucha today.
Health Aid kombucha.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feeling Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
And we're back. And yeah, so I did want to get to, you know, my favorite American author, I'll say, because, you know, I like Shakespeare too, but my favorite American wordsmith is probably Meghan McCain. And the new memoir that she dropped, it's called Bad Republican. Watch out. And it sold 244 copies in its first week out. And that, you know, it's probably like people might have realized they could spend the same amount of money on literally any other book by any other human being. But in just a little look in inside the cover. In chapter 9, on and off campus, she uses a contentious 2012 speaking gig at liberal Reed College as the canary in the coal mine for the looming threat of cancel culture.
Oh.
She came out and was like, look, this book was released 7 months ago exclusively on Audible. People listened to it. It has strong reviews, 4.4 stars, over 1,000 ratings. That's true. Those are numbers. That's an app. Those are numbers that you can, you know, futz with. And like, if you want to look at like actual appetite for a book, this is a legit book being sold by major retailers like Barnes and Noble. It is, you know, it was a fairly, by like internal metric, successful audiobook. So like, they probably aren't like hiding it away in the back of the Barnes and Noble. And exactly 244 people across America were convinced to buy it. So there's also the fact that she posted a photo on, I think it was Instagram, with her holding a child and in behind John McCain's grave, and her book is propped up like on his grave. So,
I mean, like, oh, like just the picture is so hard to look at.
Yeah.
Like, cause it's so, it's like, you know, like when people are guest on like cable news shows, and like they're clearly also wrote a book because it's like somehow the one thing facing outwardly on their bookshelf right by like next to their head. And you're like, okay, we get it. You just wrote a fucking book and there it is. Like, this is like that, except you're kind of like desecrating your father's gravesite with it, with your fucking ego.
So we wanted to look back at her literary career. Her first work was literally called My Dad, John McCain. It was a children's book all about the life of John McCain, such as the time he bombed villages in Vietnam.
I'm sorry, that's in the book?
Yep. He'd just dropped his bombs on the target when a missile blew the right wing off his plane. The plane flew out of control and crashed.
Oh my God.
I'm just going to skip forward a little bit in the writing. He didn't get the right kind of medical care for his broken bones, and the food was really bad. Once he found a chicken foot in his lunch.
What the f?
Oh, I feel like chicken feet is a food that people eat.
They're pretty yummy.
Yeah.
Is this bedtime reading?
Yeah, it looks like the bedtime books that like I read to my kids, except like not as many planes plummeting from the sky with flame and smoke trailing behind them.
I mean, when do you want to introduce your child, Jack, with some bedtime reading where you say the line, he didn't get the right kind of medical care for his broken bones? Huh?
She's writing it in like a childlike way that is, but also racism, you know? He found a chicken foot in his lunch. The food was really yucky. The fact that like that was a detail she threw in is like, I'm pretty sure he was not treated great, but the fact that that's what she came up with makes it sound like he's just very spoiled and a tourist in Vietnam who's like, ugh, yuck.
Right.
What is this?
They eat that? We don't even sell those in the store, the grocery stores in America. Wow. I thought
we just grind them up and eat them in hot dogs.
There's like something interesting too, right? About like, there's so much nepotism is just like at the heart of like everything she does. And even John McCain to a certain extent, but like because he was an admiral's son, like in the thing she was talking about being the canary in the coal mine for cancel culture. She's talking about how, quote, after describing how angry students accused her of nepotism and mocked her for being ignorant about tax policy, she laments the rosy days of civil minded debates. And that theme, like, it's actually like she touches on her father's nepotism in the book, because after the thing about the chicken foot in his lunch, it said, quote, but then my dad got a chance most prisoners didn't. Since he was an admiral's son, the Vietnamese who had captured him said they would let him go home.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I guess you're being honest, too.
Right.
Like, and it's true, because he was an admiral's son, he was afforded something that the other prisoners of war weren't.
Yay. And because his daughter, you're reading this book right now.
And yes, again, my dad, John McCain.
Her first book was like a six-figure like bidding war.
Oh, 6 figures. Okay.
I just want to... So it says... from this article from the time, John McCain's 24-year-old daughter, Megan, has a book deal! ! They're excited. Sources say Hyperion has prevailed over at least three other publishers in an auction that began earlier this week following a round of meetings during which the in-your-face young conservative and the literary agent she shares with her father, Sterling Lord Literistic President Flip Brophy, discussed a number of possible approaches to the book with editors around town.
All right, Flip.
So Sterling Lord Literistic is the label or the agency?
Yeah,
and then
I guess,
Flip Brophy. Hell yeah. So in that book, they were like, we got to give him fucking something. You're so boring. Do you have any like crimes you committed? And so she divulged this one that when... I forget which campaign it was. It was one of her dad's presidential campaigns, primaries, where he was going against Giuliani. She was out in the field stealing campaign signs off of people's lawns. Never thought anyone would enforce this, nor did I expect we'd get caught. But just as we had pulled over and I had shoved a ton of Romney signs, so it was 2012, I guess.
2012, maybe, yeah.
Romney signs into our trunk. Another car pulled up and blocked us. A super dorky guy in a suit leaped out of his car. He was pissed as hell. See, that is a sentence that you don't read in most books. He was pissed as hell. What campaign are you with? He yelled. Giuliani, we said. He pulled out a notepad, proceeded to take down our license number. This is when I started freaking out. McCain daughter arrested was the headline that I saw in my head. Getting arrested on the day of the New Hampshire primary. Oh, man. I imagine the look on my mom's face. If only we could get away. Then she like yells at the guy to move his car. He was such a jerk. And when he wouldn't move his car, my heart started to race. And I was afraid for a minute that I might do something even worse than stealing a bunch of Romney signs.
Whoa.
But anyone who was lame enough to pull over and harass people on election day for stealing signs was probably lame enough to follow up and bring some New Hampshire state police. And then she blames it on, she like gives a phone number. She gives the guy a fake phone number, which is like one of her dad's aides. And then is like, hey, don't be mad at me, but I like sort of gave your phone number to somebody when I was caught stealing yard signs because I'm like so incompetent. Yeah.
Wow. So good. What a fun time.
Yeah.
What if I get arrested for stealing lawn signs? Wow, the stakes are so high, Megan.
Yeah, so I think she like said she found the one campaign intern who also had blonde hair and was just like, that we'll be able to pass it off on her. And like literally says that in the book.
First of all, I'm surprised that only one campaign intern had blonde hair.
Right.
Yeah.
That sounds
kind of shocking. In the Republican primary, really?
Yeah.
Oh man.
Yeah.
Well, it makes me happy that my dad never did anything spectacular. Right. Because I think because I work in film, I'm surrounded by a lot of nepotism, but I have friends who have famous parents and it affects them in so many ways, and some of them handle it well and some of them don't. And you know, it creates this interesting, you know, conundrum with some people of like, what's the, you know, how can you, without being given something unfairly, how could you carry on a legacy? Like, it's something that I'm glad that I never have to think about.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. And just reading books. My dad is this person, the book. What?
Yeah.
Like, you couldn't, like, that's like, man, such a hardcore distillation of a book about nepotism where you just go, my dad is this guy, the book.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Okay. Just such a like naked psychological profile of like somebody who has never like really done shit, gets famous for who their parent is, and then is like so insecure about that when people are like, you don't have any insight into the thing you are here to talk about, she's like, cancel culture. It's like, no, yeah. No, we're like talking, we just think your policy understanding is very lacking. You're trying to cancel me because I'm conservative. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a tough road.
She was given that first book deal when she was 24. But yeah. Who has anything to say when they're 24 anyway?
Yeah.
I mean,
like, I can't imagine what my 24-year-old book would have been about.
Oh, the section, yeah. The one interesting section feels to me like a college essay where you're like, what else? Well, there was that one time where I faced adversity because I was terrible at doing a thing. And it's like a draft that gets that your counselor's like, no.
One time my sense of white privilege almost got me in trouble. So that was kind of hair raising. What else? Like this other thing, which I think is maybe the only useful thing that was in that book, was her talking about living in sketchy hotels on the road. Quote, for instance, after 6 months on the road, whenever Shannon and Heather and I checked into a cheap hotel where the campaign was staying, we just assumed that there would be pubic hair on the toilet seat or on the side of the bathtub. We had a technique for dealing with it. We used a blow dryer to blow the hairs off if the electrical cord was long enough. Genius.
Oh my God.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. No one, like, see, now where is that information in your new book?
That also is a terrible solution to that, because you're just blowing it elsewhere.
Blowing him around?
You're just blowing really it around. Point. You're more likely to, like, get a fucking pubic hair on your lip or something. Like, no, you just get a handful of toilet paper and pick it up, yeah, and then throw
or
that
move
in the,
them towards the bathtub and run the shower and let the water do the job if you're, you know, so inclined. But yeah. Hey, we had a technique for that.
I haven't been following it that closely, but I know that Steve Schmidt wrote that really long Twitter thread recently about Meghan McCain being kicked off the campaign and all of that.
Oh, I didn't know that.
But yeah, but like, this is someone who many people have found to be insufferable for a long time.
Yeah.
I only follow her literary career. I don't actually follow any other aspect of her. So,
right. And I think didn't she call him a pedophile, basically? Like, in response, I think she clapped back in a very odd way. And we're like, oh, we're doing that?
It's advanced internet. Only Elon Musk and Meghan McCain are at that level.
Right. Oof, I don't know. So, yeah, I mean, Steve Schmidt is another one of those people who's like, remember when I was a Republican? But look, I don't like Trump, though. So let's forget anything else I may have said prior to that and just say I'm one of the good ones now because I don't like Trump. But then every now and then I will show my big GOP butt on TV like it's, you know, that I haven't left the party like that.
Well, Danny, such a pleasure having you. Where can people find you, follow you, all that good stuff?
On the socials, I am Danny F. Leonard, which reads Danny Flennard. I know that that sounds kind of silly. And that's the best way to find me. And hopefully I will have some new comedy shows being announced soon. The show I mentioned earlier, Adult Sex Ed, is the one that I'm doing the most frequently. And then I have a film that I produced that came out recently called Coast, which is on demand now. So you could find it on iTunes and Amazon and Vudu, Google, all those places.
Hell yeah. Is it about roller coasters? Is it about the sea?
No. Oh, that makes me wish it was about roller coasters. It was filmed on the Central California coast, but it's also a euphemism for kind of coasting through life. And it's a coming of age story that takes place in a mostly immigrant farming community in California. And it's about a 16-year-old girl whose life is upended when a traveling rock band gets stuck in her town. And she has to decide if she should stay or if she should go. And it has a really killer soundtrack and it's super fun. So
that sounds amazing.
People should definitely check it out.
Nice.
Awesome. Is there a tweet or some other work of social media that you've been enjoying?
I'm a really big fan of people who made some kind of a pivot during the pandemic and found something else that they're really good at and aren't necessarily doing what they did before. And there's this woman who founded a YouTube channel and where she works out and does workouts for senior citizens. And it's called Yes to Next, Y-E-S, the number 2, and Next. And it encourages fitness and joy at any age. And so I received an email about this and I went on the YouTube channel and I'm not going to do any of these senior citizen workouts, but I might watch all of them because they're so adorable.
Yeah.
So that's my piece of media that I'm really like liking, that YouTube channel.
Yeah.
Miles, where can people find you? What's a tweet you've been enjoying?
Well, find me on Twitter and Instagram at Miles of Gray. Also, the basketball podcast, Miles and Jack Got Mad Boosties.
That's true,
check that out. We got a new episode coming out Thursday. It's going to be wonderful. And also 420 Day Fiance. If you're a fan of 90 Day Fiance, check out that pod. I do as well. A tweet I like. First one is from Taddy Mason at @no_goblins. Just tweeted, people who claim they don't poop in public. First of all, you're lying. Second of all, how? Look, I can't explain how we do what we do, but our bodies just don't enter that mode in public. It's like a governance chip on a car. Like some cars know when you're on a racetrack and now it says, okay, you can use all of the horsepower in the engine. For me, my body says, man, if you ain't on home court, we're not playing.
And then as you're approaching the front door, does it just like start to break down and you're like, oh boy, oh no.
Well, look, we don't have to talk about that part, but let's just say you're spot on. Yeah. And then another thing, the body knows. Another tweet I like is from Rachel at @nurse_ratch, tweeted McRib, and in parentheticals, my chemical romance is back.
Two great things. The return of the McRib, the return of my chemical romance. Yeah. Two things to celebrate. You can find me on Twitter at @Jack_O'Brien and also on Miles and Jack at Matt Boosties. Mm-hmm. Some tweets I've been enjoying. Noah at Noah Do Not Care tweeted MFSB wearing Dior but not deodorant. Al Wobotka tweeted men sure love yelling, let's go, at literally anything that goes the slightest bit positively. We do.
Because we only have one mode of expressing positive feelings, and it's only in an athletic context.
Let's go.
It has to map to anything.
Hell yeah.
Dude, what? The food got here early? Let's go!
And then Kenny at @evilbeast382941 tweeted, I love saying, I don't bite to people because low-key I be biting people. You can find us on Twitter at Daily Zeitgeist. We're at The Daily Zeitgeist on Instagram. We have a Facebook fan page and a website, dailyzeitgeist.com, where we post our episodes and our footnotes. We link off to the information that we talked about in today's episode, as well as a song that we think you might enjoy. Miles, what song do we think people might enjoy?
Okay. This is a track from an artist, Molly Lewis, who's like kind of big in LA. She's from Australia originally, but she's, man, the tracks she make are like, they sound like super like retro stuff, like a, you know, like almost feels like something like Stan Getz would be on, or just like this kind of, it's very retro sounding, and it's done in such an authentic way that when I first heard it, I was like, what artist is this from the 60s? This is from now. And you know, her tracks have featured like on like in Atlanta and other things like that. So this is like kind of, you know, very, very interesting artist. So check this out. It's a very haunting but like sultry song. It's called Satin Curtains. And it's all instrumental with like her doing like this spooky sort of humming falsetto thing. It's really cool. It's good texture music in the background. It's not too lyric intensive. So enjoy that. Satin Curtains by Molly Lewis.
Haunting. Sultry.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like that's like a movie review of like
Ghostbusters 2.
Yeah. Why was I thinking of Ghostbusters? I was thinking of Sigourney Weaver.
Yeah, Ghostbusters. Exactly.
Anyways, our brains are both melded and broken.
Okay.
The Daily Zeitgeist is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. That's going to do it for us this morning. We're back this afternoon, though, to tell you what is trending. And we will talk to you all then. Bye.
Bye.
Here's something you might not know about wireless. Sometimes what you see isn't what you get. But with Visible, what you see is what you get. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Just $25 per month, taxes and fees included. Switch now at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
There's two kinds of people in the world, people who love Health Aid kombucha and people who have never tried it. The bubbly mix of probiotic tea and refreshing juice is delicious and good for your gut health, with great flavors to choose from that you can't help but love. If you've never tried it before, maybe try a bottle or can of passion fruit tangerine or ginger lemon. Your taste buds and your gut will thank you. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid kombucha today.
Health Aid kombucha.
Managing your diabetes just got easier. The powerful new Dexcom G7 lets you see your glucose numbers on your compatible watch and phone without finger sticks. And because Dexcom G7 is the most accurate CGM system, you can be confident in your food, exercise, and medication decisions. And all those decisions can lead to big results, like more time in range and lower A1C. Get started at Dexcom.com.
Dexcom data on file 2023. If your glucose alerts and readings from the G7 do not match symptoms or expectations, use a blood glucose meter to make diabetes treatment decisions. For a list of compatible devices, visit Dexcom.com/compatibility.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feeling Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.